Everybody, my name's Noah. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since August 26th, 1996. It was not my idea, I assure you. And at least one person here was born about 8 months prior to me getting sober, which has been a fun journey as people are like, oh my God, you've been sober longer than my dad's been alive. Like, which is not true for anybody yet, but it's coming soon. And it really wasn't my idea. I got in some trouble, which isn't required, just what happened to me. I wound up, I got this attorney because the Pennsylvania State Police disagreed with some stuff I did. And my attorney said, well, I think the best we can do for you is about 2 to 5 years. And I don't know about you, I thought I was a tough guy until I thought about 2 to 5 years in jail. And I was like, that was the first time I remember consciously being aware of actual fear. Because for me, fear typically was anger. It came out as anger and rage and sometimes violence, but usually it was just violence in my head about things that I was going to do to you if I have an opportunity that never actually came to fruition. But I thought about them over and over and over and over again, and they changed and they morphed and they got worse. And then the people that you were talking to and hanging out with also deserved the similar violence that was going on in my head. So I made a lot of friends, you know, pretty easily. And, you know, one of the reasons that I'm here tonight is because alcohol quieted that, right? That thing that was going on over and over and over again, it quieted that. And that's one of the reasons I'm here. So I'm grateful that you guys asked me. Thank you very much. I've heard people stand up for years and years at the podium and be like, it's an honor to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, that's just some dumb crap people say because they heard some other jackass say it. And but today, that's for me, that's very true, right? Because I know a lot of the people at this meeting, and I know how much this meeting means to them. And 20 years, that's a big deal, right? That's, nobody has murdered each other, right? I'm sure there's been anger and resentment and, you know, infighting and, you know, what are you doing with my girlfriend? And I'm sure there's been all that kind of stuff, or your boyfriend, you know, I don't want to be sexist or anything, but, you know, but you guys have gotten through that, right, because of the stuff that's behind us. Right, and that's awesome. So congratulations to you guys for not murdering each other. And it is a great honor, right? Because I know how important this group is to a lot of the people in this room, and so that's an honor that you guys asked me to participate in your meeting, and I appreciate that. My very first drink. I was 16 years old. I was on an exchange program in Germany. And I mean, I had a couple of sips here and there, sips of beer and whatnot. But the first time I got drunk, we landed at like, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning, got introduced to the family that I was going to be living with. Later that night, that family took me to a like little festival thing that was celebrating a bunch of things, including the American kids arriving in their little town. And not long after that, I started ordering liter mugs of beer, which is awesome. And I was having a great time. Before this, I was shy. I was a little uncomfortable. I was definitely not going to like speak first, typically, to somebody. And I'm hanging out at a table with like the sheriff of the little town and the mayor and the principal of the school is the father of the family that I'm staying with. And I was having a great time and I was hammered. And I got up to go to the bathroom and the sidewalk felt, it was like 45 degrees, right? Now, I don't know what that was specifically, but as I was walking to the bathroom, I thought, so this is why people drink. Now, I could not have told you what this was, right? It certainly wasn't just the 45 degrees thing. It was the comfort, right, is my assessment today. And I did not, like, I thought, we're definitely doing this again soon because this is amazing. And what happened was I discovered alcohol, right? Our book talks about we discovered alcohol. I do not remember the first like Sprite or iced tea or, you know, but I discovered alcohol. And I spent that entire month that I was there every night getting hammered. It was pretty lax, and we would go out for lunch. Which was mean because the culture, at least at the time, was you go home for lunch and you have lunch with the family. That's the big meal of the day. But there were a handful of us that didn't do that. We were invited, but we're like, no, we're going to go to the bar. And we went to the bar and had burgers and drank and then forgot to go back to school in the afternoon. But nobody cared because we were the dumb American kids. So it was not a big deal. It also introduced me, I was going to say it introduced me to women, but that's not true. I had seen them before. But I had not been able to talk to them, right? I had not been able to interact other than just like, you know, being a ridiculous 16-year-old fool. And at the time, I spoke enough German that I could get along, and terribly enough that apparently it was cute. And I had a great time. And, you know, I hear people like, oh, drugs are part of my story. Not part of my story, personally. Women are definitely a part of my story, however. And they, see, it sounds silly, right? So, I had this great time. And I finally had found something I was good at, is what it felt like. Because a bunch of my buddies were getting hangovers, they were getting sick, and I had none of that stuff. And I felt like I was good at it. I discovered that first or second night that a rum and coke, the more you have, the greater the percentage of rum you can have. Because rum was a little gross, but like the more, if you've had a bunch, then you can put a higher percentage until you get to like, well, we don't need any coke. And it was a fantastic month. I had a great time. I had no consequences. Now, there are consequences for others. Like that very first night when I met the sheriff and all that kind of stuff, I went off chasing a girl somewhere, and I lost the family that I was supposed to be staying with. And I wound up figuring out how to get back to their house by like 4 o'clock in the morning. And it was exciting. It was fun. You know, I had to climb like up on the roof and jump down to the backyard and go in through a sliding glass door that happened to be unlocked and upstairs to bed. And I was like, this is amazing. And I told the family the harrowing story the following morning with great rapture and entertainment, and nobody was impressed. because the thing that I did not think about at the time, and did not think about for years, was maybe the family who was responsible for the 16-year-old American kid that arrived in the country like 12 hours ago, who they lost, might be worried, right? I feel like if I was responsible for someone's 16-year-old kid and I lost them in their first day in the country, I might be worried. It did not cross my mind. And that was the pattern of my life. It wasn't that I was trying to be mean. It wasn't that I was trying to step on your toes. It wasn't that I was trying to behave this way. I was simply trying to have a good time. And I was unaware most of the time of the damage that I was causing. As I got older, I was a volunteer firefighter, worked on an ambulance, hung out with this guy named Matt. Matt and I would go behind the firehouse into his pickup truck, and he had a cooler in between the seats. He like purposely took out the storage and put a cooler there. Matt was awesome. And we weren't going anywhere. We just went out to the back of the firehouse to drink because he had beer in his thing. And he put like 5 or 6 of them up on the dash and cracked them all open. And I was like, what are you doing that for? He's like, well, lets the fizz out so I can drink them faster. I was like, oh, genius. So like I said, Matt was awesome. I've never had like crack 3 Sprites in a restaurant, right? Like, hey, can I get 3 of those cans real quick so that we can get that fizz down? And I made up all kinds of like, not even excuses, because I didn't know I was making excuses, but people are like, wow, you're drinking really fast. I was like, well, I mean, beer gets warm fast and it's gross when it's warm, so like, you gotta, and I don't want to have like an empty mug, because that's weird, right, I think? if I have an empty mug and everybody else has a full mug. So I just, yeah, so I drink fast. That's no big deal. I eat fast, too. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but nobody gave me crap about that, though. And eventually, went to college, got kicked out of college, because I thought I was a genius. You know, I was had this job. I was making like 11 bucks an hour. I was rolling in cash. And all my friends were writing papers. I was like, you idiots. And I had the best of both worlds, because I went to all the college parties, went to all the frat parties, did all that kind of stuff, but had a job, didn't have to write papers, and no tests. I was like, perfect. Until all my friends started graduating and getting jobs. And I was like, ooh, I may have made an error in judgment. But I had nowhere to go, nothing to do. The other thing that I didn't notice that was happening at that time is that my world was getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. My 21st birthday, like 7 women took me out for my birthday. There were probably dudes there, but I don't recall that part at all. I remember these 7 women that I was hanging out with, and I did 21 shots. I was the only one in the crew that didn't throw up. And I thought, this is stuff I'm good at. And I had a great time. Had a great time. Wound up dating one of those gals for a while. And I really, I mean, I've had a number of times in my life where I felt like I have arrived. And I wanted to share this with folks, right? My little brother, he's 4 years younger than me. So he was like 16, 17. I kept trying to get him to come up to where I lived in Pennsylvania because I was wanted to introduce him to this amazing thing that I have discovered. And he wanted no part of it. He wanted no part of me. I didn't realize that. He just kept telling me about how, like, his summer was booked. And I was like, what does a 16-year-old do when your summer is booked? Like, what are you doing? Well, he was going to, like, band camp because he was in marching band. I was like, okay, that doesn't count as booked. That's lame. You need to do cool stuff like your big brother, right? Which he was having none of that either because what he saw was the way I was treating my parents, the way I was treating my friends, and the way that I was treating some of the people that were closest to me, right? And the way that I treated him. I mean, I abused him in all kinds of ways. And, you know, because if I didn't feel good, he's the one that received the punishment. He was the one that I had to step on to make myself feel better, right? Now, luckily for him, as I got older and got out into the world, there were lots of other people to try to step on. But he wanted nothing to do with me. And I didn't notice it. When I was sober a handful of months, a very close family friend kind of sat me down and was like, have you ever noticed how he's not anywhere when you are? And I was like, yeah, he's very, very busy. I'm like, no, he is avoiding you. And he was. If I came into town, you know, like to get my mom to do my laundry, for example, he had somewhere that he had to be that weekend. And I just didn't notice. I thought it was busy. Which tells you a lot about the damage that I had caused, right? And the good news for me was that alcohol made all that stuff go away, right? So that gal that I met on my 21st birthday, or I didn't meet her, I hadn't known her before, but that I started dating, we decided we're going to take a trip. She had a little girl, and we were going to go to, I can't remember what it is, some amusement park for very, very little people. And we had to stop by the ATM on the way out. I know 100% that last night I took my last $20 out, and there's like $2.67 in the bank. However, I have to make it look good. So we have to stop by the bank so that I can get money out for our weekend, knowing there's $2.67 in there. And my wallet is empty. And so I make a big stink, this big show about, you know, oh my God, the bank, they're such jackasses. And she just pays for the entire weekend, right? And I'm, you know, somewhere inside, I'm not okay with that. I'm uncomfortable. Later that night, and I didn't want to go any of the rides. I didn't want to, this is stupid, right? Terrible attitude. Until her kid goes to sleep and we break out the beers. And now we're sitting on the steps at a Red Roof Inn, which is a super classy place to drink. You know, it's like outside, right? And it was all good. It was all good then. And that's one of the things that alcohol did for me, is it was all good. I didn't realize that was happening, but it's like I had this, I had a way that I wanted you to think of me, right? I had this image that I wanted to portray, and I wanted you to think of me in this way. And it changed over time, but whatever that image was, I knew somewhere, maybe not consciously, but I knew that that wasn't quite accurate. Or there were a bunch of places that I wasn't living up to, right? Like, I felt that tonight. Terry said, oh, and he remembered my name. That story can't possibly be true, right? I'm really glad you remember it that way. I'm terrible with names. Terrible. Thank you. Nikki's nodding, yes. Thank you. Appreciate you agreeing with me on that. But I knew that this, I knew that the reality of Noah was not this image that I wanted you to think of me, right? And I had this show and I had this, you know, bravado or whatever it was to make you think that. But what alcohol did for me is it made me feel like the guy that I wanted you to think I was, right? It closed that gap. And it didn't matter what it was. In almost everywhere that I went, I didn't feel like I fit in, right? When I was hanging out with my firefighter buddies, those dudes were legit badass, right? And I'm faking it. I wear the same outfit, right? But it's different, at least in my mind, those guys and me. And then I would hang out with my college buddies where I had to wear a different outfit. And I didn't quite fit in there either, right? I heard a guy once say that I'm too good for the bad people and too bad for the good people. And that's 100%, that described me to a T. Alcohol closed that gap, right? Alcohol made all that stuff okay. So fast forward a couple of years, start getting in a bunch of trouble. I get arrested. Like I said, I need a lawyer. The lawyer says that I should go see this anger management counselor. I like pound my fist on his desk and swipe crap off his desk to explain how I'm not angry, you know? Which the irony was lost on me at the time, just for the record. But he said it would look good for court, right? So I went see this lady. And she talked to my mom, talked to my dad, talked to my mom and dad, talked to my brother, my mom and dad, my brother, like the whole combination, and then brought me in. And we talked for a while and had a couple of sessions with her, and she said, you know, maybe you should probably check out this Alcoholics Anonymous thing. And I was, like, uninterested. My parents had brought it up prior, right? I did not know this, but about the same time my parents were starting to do Al-Anon. And my mom sat me down after I'd gotten arrested and arraigned and all that kind of stuff, and I was at home. And I had lost everything. Lost my job, lost the volunteer position with the fire department, lost my job on the ambulance, lost my job as a 911 dispatcher, lost my girlfriend, and lost my place to live. Like, you know, they talk about scorecard read zero. My scorecard was 100% at zero. Matter of fact, my parents were arguing about whether or not they were going to let me move back in with them or not, right? So they're like deciding homelessness or not, and they took me in, and I'm grateful. Man, now I don't remember where I was going. It was a fantastic point, though. So I get in all this trouble. Oh, the anger management counselor. So my mom sat me down and said, do you think that maybe drinking is a problem? And I was in a place in my life where I was honestly trying to take a look at whether or not I thought drinking was truly a problem. And when I went back and tried to analyze my life, it did not appear that drinking was the problem, right? Because I thought back to like the girlfriend that I mentioned at the time. When we were drinking, we were having sex, we were having fun, we were laughing, we were giggling, right? It was fantastic. When we were not drinking, There was fighting and arguing. There was the very fantastic, infamous time when I'm standing in the kitchen with a frying pan over my head and she's yelling, hit me, hit me, hit me, right? It was true love. And but so it did not look like alcohol was a problem, right? I didn't have the words like alcohol was the solution at the time. That's what I believe today, right? And I look back at like the parties that I went to. All the parties where I was drinking were way better. Like parties that I went to with like the church kids that weren't drinking, like lame. And part of that was because who am I going to talk to? Like, who am I going to talk to? Who am I going to go hang out with? Where do my hands go? Am I doing that? Like, oh man, everybody's got to wear a tie. Wait, nobody's wearing a tie. What the hell am I doing wearing a tie? And like, somewhere else. And there was definitely not enough room for names in what was going on up here. And so it did not look like alcohol was a problem. It, to me, it, now, alcohol was the solution, like I said. So I get this anger management counselor. She recommends Alcoholics Anonymous. I get a where and when, which for those of you that were born in 1996, was a book with paper that somebody printed, and it had a list of where the meetings were and what time they were, and their addresses, because they didn't have Google Maps to look them up in. And sometimes they had the ADC map number and intersection, for those of you that are as old as I am. Thank you very much. And so I went through the whirlwind, and I was flipping through, and I don't know how you choose a meeting. I don't know. And I was flipping through, and I saw young people. And I thought, ooh, there might be girls there. Because right? I had a ton to offer, right? I very literally had been arrested for trying to kill my ex-girlfriend, right? And so I was incredibly attractive to the fairer sex. And had so many good things. I had no job. I was living with my parents at 22. I was looking at 2 to 5 years in jail. I owed my parents money for an attorney now. Like, you know, exactly what you're looking for on eHarmony, right? And, but again, the irony totally lost on me, right? So I show up at this meeting. It looks like it's the church band. There are way too many people having way too much fun, smoking, goofing off. And I was like, well, that can't be Alcoholics Anonymous because I know everything. And Alcoholics Anonymous is lame. This does not appear to be lame. So I went through all of them. I tried to look at the church directory that was inside the door, but I didn't stay long enough because I didn't want anybody to say anything to me. And I kind of went through and I went in and up and I found the first room that I saw people in. And it was like 8 200-year-old women. And I was like, yep, this has to be Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went in, and they knew where I belonged, and it wasn't in that room, right? It was, you know, there's a little Bible reading or a Bible study group. And they were like, AA? And I said, yeah, upstairs. So now I'm late. I go upstairs, go walk into the meeting a couple of minutes late. And I sit down, and in my first AA meeting. On the way there, I was thinking, do I really want to do this? Like, you know, there's a part in Bill's story that talks about he knows he's going to be the head of vast enterprises. I very literally had that exact thought, that someday, I'm going to be the head of vast enterprises. I use different words in my head, but it sounds good with Bill's words. And I don't want to be driving around in my Ferrari someday with like remembering that time that I had to go to an AA meeting, right? This is what I'm thinking. And so I show up, sit down, and I'm very, very grateful that what happened was there were a bunch of people that were paying attention to the traditions, right? Because when I walked into that meeting, they were talking about alcoholism. They were talking about what made them different from their fellows. One guy talked about how he would walk in a room full of people and felt all alone. But after a few drinks, the room changed and became more welcoming. I could never have put those sentences together, But that's I knew exactly what he was talking about when he said that. Right? Talked about drinking even when I didn't want to. And at first I was like, nope, not me, because I never didn't want to. Which isn't true. Right? That the one young lady that I mentioned, we had a very loving and caring fist fight. And she hit me in the face with a cordless phone that required 3 or 4 stitches. And I punched her in the mouth, which is not stuff that I'm proud of, right? But this is where I was and what I was doing. And we decided that she had a problem with drinking, right? It's not that funny. It's really not. And so because I'm such a loving and caring guy, and the bruises on my face will clear up soon, I will also not drink with you, because I care. That lasted 3 weeks, right? She went out with the girls one night, I went out with the boys, and I changed the rules. And that was something that happened all the time. I changed the rules, I changed my mind, right? And the reason that I didn't ever think that I drank when I didn't want to is because I would change my mind, and now I want to, so it doesn't count. And I change my mind all the time, right? I'm only gonna have one. Well, maybe 7. And change my mind. We used to take turns driving and drinking. Somehow when it was my night to drive, I always wound up drunk. I did not mean to. I got thrown out of my my home bar, like the bar that I was at, 4 or 5 nights a week. Because the bartender gave me a beer, and I was probably being a jackass. And I had only drank the neck of it, and he cut me off and said, "You're done, you've had too many." Which I had literally had the neck of a beer total. And I grabbed him by the shirt and started to pull him over the bar. I don't know why that seemed like a good idea at the time. I did not make it very far. And I got literally thrown out. So I'm sitting in this meeting and they're talking about these things, right? Where I'm changing my mind, walking into rooms full of people, and the look changes. The other thing that I did is I started, pre-gaming. Because at first I thought it was fiscally responsible. I didn't think to myself, I'm going to get hammered before I go to the bar so that I feel comfortable when I get there. It was never a thought in my mind. It was simply much more intelligent and more fiscally responsible to get hammered before. And then I thought, I can keep a bottle in my car. I can have a drink for whatever the hell it cost at the time, which was ridiculously expensive then. I can go out to the car and have a little more, and then I can come in and buy a drink like everybody else. I was like, I am such a genius, so smart. But this meeting that I went to, like I said, these guys were paying attention to the traditions. And they were talking about alcoholism. And I could not have heard anything else, right? I was already looking for a reason to not belong. I was already looking for a reason why I'm different from you. I mean, it was already clear, right? They looked like a Gap commercial, and I was clearly cool, right? And which was the furthest thing from cool, but a couple of felony charges for attempted murder, not cool. And after the meeting, the gal that I sat next to, attractive young lady, she gave me a big book. We all know what that means. Not a damn thing, but I was convinced. I thought I knew what it meant. And what it meant was she wanted to introduce me to her boyfriend so that he could sponsor me, right? That's what it actually meant. But I got surrounded, right? I got surrounded by a bunch of guys, and I thought, this is weird. Like, what is going on here? Because I'm here to tell you, nobody was interested in spending time with me. Since the day I got arrested, the guys at the firehouse None of those guys have called me, looked me up, sent me a Christmas card, anything. My high school still sends me cards because they want my money, but that's it. But nobody else was sending, nobody else was calling me up. Nobody wanted to see how I was doing. No one was trying to get me to come hang out. Nobody wanted anything to do with me, including my brother and including one of my parents. So these people being interested in me was weird. And they invited me over. They said, hey, we're having pizza at our house tonight after the meeting, and we're going to watch a movie. Do you want to come? My first thought was, I am very busy, which was clearly not true. But I was so desperate that I went. Because two things happened during that meeting. The first one was, because I knew something was wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. But I knew something was wrong with me. I was brought up in this, like, what I would call a Kool-Aid and cookies family, right? No, none of the, like, traditional, like, CBS special type reasons that somebody would drink the way that I did, right? Fantastic family, fantastic human beings. My little brother grew up in the same house, drinking the same water, with the same parents, going to the same schools. He's got a master's degree in biomedical engineering. He's got his name on a bunch of patents. He's now a black belt in Taekwondo, along with two of his daughters, one of whom is 10. Super shameful for me personally, but my point is, it was not my environment that caused this, right? There was something wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. And at that first meeting, I thought, maybe this is what's wrong with me. Maybe what these people are talking about is what's wrong with me. And the second, another thing that happened is, I had a terrible attitude about religion and God. And we were reading the second step. It doesn't say God there, but I know what they mean. And if you read the second step in the big book, there's a whole lot of, like, avoiding the word God. And there was a basket going around. We're in a church. I was like, I know what you're doing. And so, but there was a line in that reading that said, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe in a power greater than myself? And I don't know why at that moment I thought, I can be willing to believe. I immediately was like, I won't, but I'm willing. Which doesn't make any sense, but that's exactly what I thought. And like I said, I went over to their house after the meeting, hung out with some folks. Before I went to their house, however, they were saying, what are you doing tomorrow night? And if someone asks, if you're new, and someone says, what are you doing tomorrow night? We know you're not doing anything. I don't know why we ask, but we do. I think it's just because we're polite. And they knew that I was doing nothing, and they wanted me to go to another meeting. I was like, two in a week? This is getting a little extreme. And God bless this woman. That gal that I sat next to that gave me the big book, she was like, I'll be there. Me too. She's a lying bitch. She was not there. But God bless her, because she knew what I needed, right? And one of the guys that lived at that house, a guy named Drew, I started following Drew around. Drew had a brand new Acura, but he desperately needed rides in my beat up hoopty to get to meetings. I had an old Pathfinder that I had taken off road, you know, hammered, because driving drunk off road, totally cool apparently in my mind. And it was a disaster. But he needed me to pick him up for meetings. And Drew was sober exactly 4 years longer than I was. And Drew had service commitments. Drew had a sponsor. Drew was sponsoring other guys. He had a job. He had a girlfriend. He was crushing it, right? And I had to pick Drew up. And Drew made coffee somewhere, so now I got to make coffee with Drew. And Drew had to set up the chairs, and then Drew had to sweep. It felt like Drew had like a 9-hour service commitment every night. And so did I. And that saved my life, right? Because I didn't know it, but I was in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous before I had any idea what was going on. And Drew and I are still really good friends today. He moved down to Atlanta, or I guess for you guys, up to Atlanta. Moved further, less up to Atlanta. And we're still in touch. We still talk weekly. And I'm really grateful because he got me set on a foundation. One of the guys that lives in that house became my sponsor because I thought he would get some sort of commission or something because he kept nagging me about, like, do you have a sponsor? Do you have a sponsor? I was like, Jesus, yeah, okay. God. And he was also really smart. I went to him complaining once about being surrounded by stupid people. And he's like, you know, you should make a list of all of those people that are stupid jackasses. And I was like, huh. Now we're talking. And I started my fourth step by accident. I like to think that I'm really smart. I really like to think that. My mom thinks that I am. But there is so much evidence, right? Like, I had been in how many four-step meetings and read the four-step, and like when he was telling me to make this list, and I was like, oh, yeah. What? I'm just an idiot. But I was in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started doing the steps. I had gotten a sponsor. And I tell this portion about my sponsor because it's important to me that it does not matter, in my experience, who my sponsor is. I need a sponsor, right? My first sponsor, at some point, went on vacation with his girlfriend. They pinky swore or something like that on the Eiffel Tower that if one of them drank, the other one would, right? And he started sliding out of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because he was just trying to set up his chess pieces for when he was done. And so I don't know how long it was, but for at least a number of months, he was sliding out of Alcoholics Anonymous. He sponsored like 12 guys. He was the chair of our inner group. I mean, he was in the middle of AA. But actually, the night of our anniversary, Midtown's anniversary, he went out into the bathroom at a Christmas party for work, did some coke, had a beer, and brought a beer out for his girlfriend. And she said, fuck you. And I haven't seen her in a while, but I know that she was sober at least 10 or 12 years after that. I haven't seen her in a while, so I don't know. But that whole time I was calling him regularly. That whole time I was taking inventory and calling him and getting direction and recommendations and suggestion. Is it possible that some of those recommendations were less than ideal? Probably. I don't know. But I stayed sober because I was taking the action, right? The action was the most important thing at the time. So I need to be doing something. I need to be looking at myself. I need to be trying to figure out, like, where am I causing all this damage, right? He sent me out to, my little brother went to University of Illinois because it has a really good engineering program and a great marching band. And I was like, what a dork. And my sponsor was like, you should go out to Illinois and you should watch him and support him doing his marching band thing. And I was like, oh. Like, I'm afraid someone might see me like being positive for something that I think is nerdy, which is hilarious. And so I went out. And at University of Illinois, they do this thing where the band marches from the field house to the stadium. It's a mile or so. And what seemed like the entire student body marches behind them. And my brother organized stuff so that I could be on, he was on the outside of the, whatever the hell it's called. Sorry, don't know. So that I could walk next to him, right? And they have these little cadences and these little dance moves, and there was one that they would do when the drum line would do something, and you know, they'd go up and down and left and right and spin around and then punch the person next to them in the shoulder, right? I'm not very musically inclined. I could not figure out the pattern. And my brother got such a kick out of surprising me when they would spin and punch. And then something truly miraculous happened. I laughed, right? And started rebuilding that relationship with my little brother, which was not my goal, right? And probably it wasn't specifically my sponsor's goal. He's like, go take some action, go do something. And I went and did something that felt uncomfortable, that seemed like a terrible idea. And I went and did that. And so I went out there a handful of times while he was there. I did make, depends on who you ask, one small mistake. I came to care a lot about the band in my own terrible way. And I was sitting in the band parents section, and there was a girl sitting behind me talking smack about the band. Oh no. I had gained some confidence in talking to all kinds of people, perhaps a little too much for my, a little ahead of my headlights. And I had mentioned, you know, made some recommendations to her. And I was poking her in the chest, which apparently is wrong. And when she swatted my hand away, with an open hand, I hit her square in the chest, and she went ass over tea kettle over the bleachers. And I don't know, she went and got the cops for some reason. And I got kicked out of the stadium. I didn't get to see my brother's senior year, right? Now, I did sneak back in. I got back in and saw it, but we did not tell that story to my little brother, right? A number of years later, he got married. He called me. He's like, hey, I'm thinking about proposing to my girlfriend. What do you think? A few years after that, he had his first daughter, Alina. And he called me. He's like, hey, you got to come out and see my baby girl. So I flew out. Got in late at night, and Alina was probably 2 weeks old, something like that. And he woke me up in the morning putting his baby girl in my arms. I did not want that when I went to the University of Illinois to watch a bunch of nerds with instruments march down the street, right? But I got to start building a relationship with that little girl too, right? She's one of the black belts now. We used to like to wrestle on the floor a lot. I was out there last year, and I got both of her ankles and her wrists in one hand and was tickling her. And her dad was like, don't you know how to kick, black belt? And she does. No more wrestling. Game over. But one of the things that my mom looks forward to about having, like, we're out in Indiana where my brother lives with his three girls and his wife. My wife and my parents, my brother and his family, went to Indiana, which is where my brother lives, had Thanksgiving. And my mom was talking about the thing that she looks forward to the most is how much we all laugh, right? And the last thing that I'll say here is when I was sober a year or so, I was talking with my mom about, there was some TV show on that, I don't remember what prompted it, but I asked her if she was ever afraid that I was going to die or that something like that was going to happen. And she said, no, but I knew you were going to kill somebody someday. And that's not how moms are supposed to feel about their kids. And today my mom looks forward to seeing me because I make her laugh. Right? I think there's a little bit more to it than that, I hope, but that's what she was looking forward to, is the whole family being together and laughing. And I didn't do that, right? It's not because I'm there that it's amazing. But I get to be a part of it. And I'm not taken away from it. I get to add to it. And it's because of doing dumb crap that my sponsor recommends that is clearly stupid. So if you have a sponsor who's an idiot, fantastic. Do the dumb crap that he or she says. You have an idiot for a sponsor? Good. You can't say it out loud, just so you know, you can't point at him and say it out loud. But and I'm very grateful, right? And I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous that given me the opportunity to take what I call like enough action, right? Because there's always room for improvement, right? There's always room for improvement. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and but I'm really, really grateful that you guys asked me to be here. Really grateful you guys asked me to participate. And with that, I'll turn it over. Thank you very much.